Army greetings and happy Friday to all our Voice of America listeners. This is VOA's Sonny Young in Washington. Thanks for tuning in this evening. Welcome to the sunny side of sports.
Stand up! Stand up! Stand up! Stand up!
Friends, we can all listen to the sunny side of sports.
Yes, my friend.
The sunny side of sports.
Sunny side of sports.
The sunny side of sports show.
Great show, bro. This is sunny side of sports.
Sunny side of sports right here on the Voice of America.
Voice of America!
Stand up! Stand up! Stand up! Stand up!
Our starting line on the sunny side of sports is African athletics. Some of Kenya's best long-distance runners will be chasing more international marathon titles this weekend, including a race in Frankfurt, Germany. The energetic Andy Edwards caught up with one of Kenya's Olympic champions who will test her endurance on Sunday in Frankfurt. Here's Andy.
The Minova Frankfurt Marathon has a first this year. Even before anyone's set off from the start line on Sunday, they've got, for the first time ever, an Olympic champion from the track running, and that's Vivian Cheruiyot of Kenya, who's won the 5,000-meter title in Rio in 2016, five world titles on the track as well. Vivian, this will be your second marathon. You ran 2:23, fourth place in London in April. How is the adaptation going from being a track runner, because now you say you're concentrating purely on the road, to being a marathon runner? Is that an easy switch, or do you feel you're learning a lot?
I want to say that switching from track to marathon, there is some difficulties between track and marathon. The track, it's normally, when you train, it's easier, but it's a little bit high speed. But for marathon, the difficult place is long, when you are doing long runs, and it's a long event. But I know maybe when I've been racing 2 to 3 marathons, I'll get used.
So is it a case both physically and mentally? Because you say getting used to doing long runs. I mean, of course, people would assume you do quite long runs, 5 and 10,000-meter runner. But is it sheer the length of time that you are out on your feet, but also the length of the race, the marathon?
Yes, it is, because it's our longest event, and for me, because I was coming from the track, I feel like it's too long for me. But now I'm catching up. I'm catching up slowly, because in my mind I'm ready that now I'm focusing on marathon. So yeah, I'm going to catch a fail soon, because I've decided to go for marathon and I should do the marathon, so I should focus on that side.
Remembering interviews with Haile Gebrselassie and Paul Tergat, for example, they talked of how they had great track success, of course, but they had to adapt, and sometimes it was a case of actually how your foot comes down. You're used to running in running spikes, and now your race is on the road and you're running in racing flats. Do you have to make adaptations, changes there?
Yes, I have to make it, because I used to train with spikes at the track, and now it has been almost 1 year without using spikes. So I'm getting used to it, because when you are using the racing shoes, you feel that you are not moving. But I have to get used to it, because that is the way forward in marathon.
Well, you certainly were moving, because you ran 2:23 in London. I mean, we're now in Frankfurt, a couple of days from the race. In the elite women's field, five runners have run faster than you, although your 2:23 is clearly a pretty quick time. Do you see yourself as a favourite?
I want to say that I just came here to run my own race. I'm not running against anybody. But for what I was coming here is to lower my personal best. And I know the ladies from Ethiopia, they're also strong, because there is one of 2:20. And I don't want to say I'm running against somebody or what. I'm going to run my own race, and I'm going to push, and I'm going to try to run my personal best. So I don't care about who is in the race. I'm coming here to run my own race.
Yeah, because that course record for the women, 2:21.01, Meselek Melkamu of Ethiopia, five years ago now, that you do you feel that might be too big a jump to be taking, well, more than 2 minutes off? You're just going to see what happens?
Yes, it's going to be possible because when I was in London, it was my first marathon. I did a mistake the first year of marathon. The first half and the second one was so slow, but so this time I know you learn. I learned by mistake, and I should not repeat the same thing. So I hope if I balance very well, I'll make a course record.
Vivian Cherrett, we'll be interested to see how you apply those lessons learnt from London to the Minerva Frankfurt Marathon on Sunday. All the best for the race. Thank you, Vivian.
Thank you so much. God bless you.
The energetic Andy Edwards also caught up with Kenya's defending men's champion in Frankfurt. Once again, here's Andy.
It's the Minerva Frankfurt Marathon. It's a couple of days before the race, and I'm sitting with the defending men's champion, Mark Kuria of Kenya, won a thrilling contest against two other very good Kenyans in 2016. Great finish in the Festhalle in Frankfurt. So, Mark, how's the last year gone for you? It was a really impressive performance for you to win. Are you feeling equally good for the 2017 race?
Okay, thank you very much. I think last year was my second achievement in Frankfurt Marathon. So this time around, I think I've trained enough. My training has been going on well, and I've prepared, I've trained hard, and I hope this time around I'll do much better than last year.
I think it was a classic marathon in that the decisive moments came with about 35, 36 kilometres. There was you, Cyprian Kortut, and Mark Koskai, who finished second, who's sitting on the sofa next to us as well. Do you anticipate it to be similar? Because really, it all seemed to come down to the last 7 or 8 kilometres.
I think last year was pacemakers didn't do well in pacemaking. So I think this time around, I heard that there's good guys who can pace until 30 kilometres. Last year was a little slow, but I tried in 35 kilometers to push, and I really ran 2:06.
What's your training been like? Are there indications that you're in equally good form from your training, your build-up for this race?
Okay, since running in Frankfurt, I went there and trained hard. And then in March, I did my second marathon in Seoul Marathon. And I did better. I ran 2:06.05 seconds, and I really see that I'm coming. I'm achieving much better.
Yeah, that race in Seoul, South Korea. You were ninth in that marathon, and you seemed like you've spaced them apart very nicely. The spring marathon, and now we're in another of the classic autumn marathon racing seasons. And just lastly, you were the first man across the line in the Festhalle, the concert hall in Frankfurt last year. It's a finish line that everybody remembers. I mean, is that the same for you? I mean, you're the elite. You're thinking of prize money and running fast, but is that still a special finish line for you in the Festhalle in Frankfurt?
Okay, I think I want to repeat like last year, and I really enjoy finishing, crossing the red carpet. It was really fantastic for me.
Well, we wish you, Mark Kuria, the defending champion of the Minerva Frankfurt Marathon, and everybody else in the elite and mass field, a great race on Sunday. Thanks very much, Mark.
Thank you.
The Voice of America.
VOA. Hello, sports fans. This is Paul Tergat, marathon champion from Kenya. You are listening to the Sony Side of Sports on the Voice of America.
Voice of America! Oh, keep on the sunny side, always on the sunny side. Keep on the sunny side of life. It will help you every day, it will brighten all the way. If you keep on the sunny side of life. Oh, keep on the sunny side.
Our reigning prince of pugilistics, Namdi Hollywood Moeta, is back on the sunny side of sports on this Friday. Namdi says keep your eyes on a Nigerian heavyweight who recently launched his prize fighting career.
Oh, Sunny, we're smiling right here because we have a heavyweight from Nigeria. Efe Ajagba. Saturday night, he scored the second knockout in two fights. First round, he had his opponent out with two knockdowns. Remember now, he's a 2016 Rio Olympian. And now he has a good team in Ronnie Shield, his trainer that trained Evander Holyfield, and a promoter and Richard Schaefer that built Golden Boy with Oscar De La Hoya, Ring Star Promotions. With these two combinations, Efe Ajagba has a good team now. A heavyweight that can deliver the knockout is what we're looking for in that division today. So we look for 2018 to be a big year for Nigerian heavyweight Efe Ajagba.
Will he be based here in the States, Nnamdi?
He is based in Florida, and things are going very well. All they need to do is to really take good care of him, put the right people in front of him, have him knocking out guys on TV live, and then he'll be, by this time, 2018, we may be looking at homeboy striking.
All right. Let's stay with the heavyweights, Nnamdi, and we're going to go to Cardiff, Wales. That's where world heavyweight champion Anthony Joshua will put three of his title belts on the line Saturday night when he fights Carlos Takam. Takam, late replacement for Joshua's original opponent, the Bulgarian Kubrat Pulev, who pulled out with a shoulder injury. Nnamdi, the reports I'm reading say they could get a crowd of up to 80,000 at the Principality Stadium in Cardiff.
Sonny, the Principality Stadium has already got 80,000 tickets sold. Don't tell me AJ Homeboy is not a draw. Deontay Wilder can barely sell 10,000 at Barclays Arena next month.
From an African perspective, Nnamdi, is it true this is the first time two fighters with African roots will vie for the world heavyweight title?
Sonny, you're right. Carlos Takam, born and raised in Douala, Cameroon. This is the first time we have two Africans go toe-to-toe, and we expect a good fight. And the question becomes, who is Carlos Takam? Well, he's had 39 fights with 27 knockouts. He's not a bad fighter. Is he Kubrat Pulev? Even people believe that he's better than Kubrat Pulev.
Well, let's hear what AJ has to say about Takam, Nnamdi. And here's how AJ sizes up Carlos Takam.
So I've been fighting guys that are a lot taller than me. I've been preparing for a 6 foot something guy, and now I'm fighting this mini Mike Tyson, Ray Mercer, Tommy Morrison, boom, boom, hooking. So I'm going to have to kind of revert back to some different training techniques and get ready to dig deeper, stand in the trenches and trade with him and slow him down a bit. Because if not, I'm going to be jabbing and getting caught with silly left hooks and overhand rights because he's a lot shorter. That's going to be his game. It's going to take me out of my rhythm, and I'm going to have to learn how to deal with that.
Nnamdi, we heard AJ compare Takam to a mini Mike Tyson or even a Ray Mercer. Your thoughts?
Well, Takam is a 6'1". So if Takam can go past AJ's jab and stay in the pocket, which means stay in the body and do damage in the ribs, he stands a good chance of scoring a knockout. I believe what's going to happen, the question becomes, is AJ taking his eyes off the ball, thinking of Deontay Wilder, and then allowing Takam to come there and upset things? I think in front of 80,000 people, homeboy better TCB, which means take care of business, because the big part right there is Deontay Wilder at the Wembley Arena in 2018.
Nnamdi, this will be Anthony Joshua's first fight in 6 months. He stopped former world champion Vladimir Klitschko in the 11th round at Wembley Stadium in London at the end of April. That was an action-packed fight, Nnamdi. Do you think it took anything out of AJ?
No, really, he's had time to heal, and I believe if he's well-rested, he can perform and do his thing on Saturday night.
Thanks, Nnamdi. That's our reigning prince of pugilistics, Nnamdi Hollywood Moueta. In Cardiff Friday, Anthony Joshua weighed in at 254¼ pounds, the heaviest he's ever been for a fight, while Carlos Takam tipped the scales at 235½ pounds. I'm Sonny Young, and you're listening to The Sunny Side of Sports on The Voice of America.
So keep on the sunny side, always on the sunny side. Keep on the sunny side of life. It will help you every day, it will brighten our way if you keep on the sunny side of life.
All right, Roy.
Let us greet with a song of hope each day. Though the moments be cloudy or fair, let us trust in our Savior always to keep us everyone in His care. So keep on the sunny side, always on the sunny side. Keep on the sunny side of life. It will help you every day, it will brighten all the way if you keep on the sunny side of life.
Joining us once again on the sunny side of sports is Andrew Palcheski, the VOA's social media reporter. Happy Friday, Andrew.
Happy Friday to you as well, Sonny. Good to be here as always.
Welcome back, Andrew. What's trending on this Friday?
Well, we start with a story with a sport that we don't really talk about much, which is golf, and we really don't talk about high school golf very much at all. But this story is trending today because of a high school golfer named Emily Nash. She is 16 years old. She lives in the U.S. state of Massachusetts, and the school that she attends does not have a girls' golf team, so she plays with the boys. And this week, she won first place in a boys' golf tournament, beating the other male competitors using the same exact tees, using the same exact equipment that they were using. Now, as an added bonus, in addition to winning that tournament, the winner qualified for the state championships. But officials there say that Nash won't get first place, won't get the prize money, and won't go to the state championships simply because she is a girl. They say that girls cannot play in the boys' golf league. They can play as part of a team in the boys' golf league, but can't play as individuals. So this has kicked off a social media debate. Is this sexism because she's not being treated fairly? Could she have just played in the girls' tournament instead of the boys' tournament? Even if she's just an individual golfer and her school doesn't have a golf program, couldn't she have just done it on her own? Others asking, why can't women play against men if they're all following the same rules? There are some sports like tennis where the battle of the sexes has been debated because people say, well, it's a physical sport that men and women are equipped differently and they play differently. But she was playing off of the men's tees in the same spot they were playing, same kind of clubs, everything. So people wondering, why can't they all just play together? And other people wondering, well, if you do that, then why can't men play in women's events? So these are issues that have been going on for years and years, as we've talked about on the show before, the battle of the sexes between Billie Jean King and Bobby Riggs in tennis,
right.
Something that was 43, 44 years ago, and it's still being talked about today. But amid that debate, Nash is getting some support from across the internet, including from American golfer Lexi Thompson, who's the number three female golfer in the world and the youngest woman ever to win an LPGA tournament at the age of 16 when she won that. She wrote on Twitter, congrats to Emily Nash on her big win. Keep following your dreams and nothing can stop you. Hashtag girl power. So she's getting some great support from the golf world. And another person getting support, Sonny, the boy who finished in second place behind Emily Nash, he reportedly offered to give her the first place trophy, saying that she earned it and she deserved it.
Oh, so nice
he's
gesture.
A very nice gesture. But these are issues that are kind of rearing up again in social media, issues that have been talked about for quite a while. And I think they're issues that are going to still be talked about for years to come.
What else is trending out there, Andrew?
Well, another issue that's being talked about for quite a while are the protests in the National Football League. And as we talked about on the show, players and team owners were going to meet in New York at NFL headquarters to kind of sort this out. That was part of that press release that NFL Commissioner Roger Goodell released. Well, that meeting happened about 2 weeks ago, but we're getting word now in an article online about what happened in that meeting. And there's one instance in particular that is getting a lot of social media attention. It comes from Bob McNair, who is the owner of the Houston Texans football team. He reportedly said when talking about the protests, "We can't have the inmates running the prison." Now, McNair is white. Many of the players on his team are black. And a lot of people on social media saying that this is a racist statement to call his players and the people on his team, refer to them as inmates running the prison. So many people calling for him to apologize as a result of this. Other people noting that it's similar to another common idiom in the English language, which is the inmates are running the asylum.
I've heard that one.
That one I've heard before as well. So people saying, well, maybe he got his words mixed up. Many people also noting that McNair is a big supporter and major donor to President Trump, who has kicked off the kind of debate about patriotism and race and all these things in the National Football League in recent months with these protests. So Bob McNair is a trending topic today. No word yet if he's going to apologize or if he's going to make any statement about this. But right now he's getting a lot of negative attention because of those words.
Any reaction, Andrew, from his players on the team?
Not yet, but a lot of people wondering what's going to happen this Sunday, if the players are going to kneel collectively or sit or have some kind of gesture to protest what he said, because it's not sitting well with a lot of fans.
So the national anthem protest, still very much a hot topic this season.
Absolutely.
What else is trending out there, Andrew?
Well, Sonny, it's not just social media that's talking about these stories. Sometimes social media is the reason for these stories, and that is what happened with the case of Martavis Bryant of the Pittsburgh Steelers. After last Sunday's win against the Cincinnati Bengals, Bryant took to Instagram to complain that he did not get the ball enough during the game. He only had two passes that were thrown his way. Now, when one fan commented on Instagram that Bryant's teammate, Juju Smith-Schuster, was a better player, Bryant responded, he said, "Juju is nowhere near better than me. All they need to do is give me what I want, and y'all can have Juju and whoever else." And he continued on in another comment. He said, "Juju is the future. He has great talent. He's going to be one of the best to play the game. I want to get him to get his. I just want mine, period, point blank." Well, after that message on Instagram, the Steelers have a message for Martavis Bryant. If you're not happy that you're not getting the ball enough, then you're not getting the ball at all, because the team says he's been benched for this Sunday's game against the Detroit Lions. Some fans going as far as saying he should be traded because of these comments. If he doesn't like how he gets to play, then he shouldn't have an opportunity to play at all, let alone just 1 week of suspension. But other fans questioning this, again, with the NFL protest, there's been a lot of talk about players speaking out what they can and can't say, and that's the line of thought here. Some fans are wondering, why can't he speak out? If this is his opinion about his teammate, it may not be good form as a teammate, as part of the same team, but he should be allowed to speak out openly on his social media channels.
The Steelers do have a black coach. I think that's worth pointing out, Andrew.
They do.
I wonder
they
if Mike do. Tomlin had any input in this benching.
I'm not sure. It's unclear who made that decision, but maybe he'll be a little more careful with what he says on social media.
Again, maybe the perils of using social media.
Sometimes it can be perilous, that is for sure. But one instance where it was not perilous, although it did involve a suspension, is Oakland Raiders running back Marshawn Lynch. He got into a scuffle with a referee and was suspended one game because he accidentally kind of pushed the referee out of the way during a fight. But just because he can't play this week and can't practice this week doesn't mean he's not going to play elsewhere. So where did Marshawn Lynch go this week to keep his skills sharp? Back to his high school. So he took the field at Oakland Technical High School, sporting his Raiders helmet. And as we saw on his Instagram account, he put up a video of him playing with the students there. Kind of a cool moment for them. One thing I thought that was pretty funny, it takes about, in one of the plays, five or six high schoolers to take down Lynch as he's running with the ball. So it gives you some perspective of how good he is and the skills gap between high school and the National Football League. But Michael Bennett, who used to play with Lynch on the Seattle Seahawks, said he saw the video and he couldn't stop laughing. He thought it was great. And a lot of fans think it's great, too.
Andrew Palcheski, the VOA social media reporter. Have a good weekend, Andrew.
Thanks so much, Sonny. You too.
And that wraps up the October 27th edition of the Sunny Side of Sports. Thanks to Voice of America producer Bill Werkinger. Thanks also to VOA engineer Peter Hundley. And thank you for tuning in. I'm VOA's Sonny Young in Washington. Have a nice weekend, everyone. And that's the sunny side of sports.
I get it.
Next, an international public service announcement by the United States government.
The United States has expanded its offer of rewards for information on key leaders of terrorist organizations to include a leader of one of the groups conducting attacks on government facilities and other targets in northern Nigeria, roiling the nation in sectarian violence. Abu Bakr Shekau is the leader of the group commonly known as Boko Haram, a Nigeria-based extremist organization seeking to overthrow the current government there and replace it with a regime based on a strict interpretation of Islamic law. Links with terrorist groups such as Al-Qaeda and Al-Shabaab have strengthened Boko Haram's capacity to conduct its attacks. Previously, the group's number two, Shekau claimed overall command in July 2010, expressing solidarity with Al-Qaeda and threatening the United States. A vehicle bomb attack on the United Nations headquarters in Abuja in August 2011 marked the group's first lethal operation against Western interests, killing at least 23 people and injuring 80 others. In April 2012, the group bombed a Nigerian newspaper office in Abuja and later threatened other local and international news outlets, including The Voice of America. Under his leadership, the group has kidnapped hundreds of children to serve as hostages, bearers, and even fighters, most recently in the northeastern town of Damasak. Shekau is tall, slim, and has a dark complexion. He was born in Yobe, Nigeria, sometime between 1965 and 1975, and is of the Kanuri ethnicity. He speaks Arabic, Hausa, Fulani, and Kanuri. He is known to have used the aliases Abu Bakr Sikwa and Imam Abu Bakr Shekau. The Rewards for Justice program is offering a reward of up to $7 million for information leading to Shekau's location. The U.S. promises that all credible reports will be investigated, and the identity of all informants will be kept confidential. If appropriate, the U.S. is prepared to protect informants by relocating them and their families. If you have information on this man, contact the nearest U.S. embassy or consulate, or submit a tip to www.rewardsforjustice.net. or email information to info@rewardsforjustice.net. You may also call the Rewards for Justice tip line at 1-800-877-3927.
That was an international public service announcement by the United States government.
Hello, this is Peter Clotty, host of Nightline Africa. Please join us every Saturday and Sunday at 16 and 18 hours UTC. Nightline Africa is VOA Africa's weekend show that provides news, features, and entertainment news about Africa and the world. Tune in. You will be glad you did. I guarantee it.
Hello, this is Heather Maxwell, host of Music Time in Africa. Join me every Saturday and Sunday for an hour of awesome African music. Wake up, dance this music. Like to stay on top of new music trends, breakout artists, new releases? Maybe you just love the classic styles and artists of the past. Or simply the sound and feel of a good beat. Whatever your pleasure, you can get it every week right here on Music Time in Africa. So join me on your local FM station, Saturdays and Sundays at 1500 and 2000 UTC.
Hi, this is Lori London. Tune in to the Voice of America's newscast. Every hour, on the top of each hour, 24/7. listen to our news and correspondent reports from around the world. VOA is your trusted source for news and information.